Hello, Illinois Radio Reader listeners. This is Elizabeth McMahon with the News Gazette for Monday, August 24th, 2026. And I'm going to start today with some local and state news, and we'll see where that gets us. And in the second half, I'm going to cover some sports and obituaries. So I'm going to start out with the kind of top story here at the on the top of the News Gazette, and with the headline, "Bitter Pill to Swallow: Restrictive Covenant Stymies Plans to Open Small Pharmacy Near Long Closed Walgreens." And this is a story by Jana Wiersema, and I will begin. In January 2025, a Walgreens pharmacy at 1801 South Philo Road it closed its doors. A CVS across the street followed suit 4 months later, making Meijer the only pharmacy left in the Philo Road area. Mayor Deshaun Williams, who sees revitalizing this corridor as a major priority, said that the two closures had, quote, a huge impact on the community. "There's a lot of elderly folks in the area who require a lot of attention in regards to their pharmacy and prescription needs and things of that nature," he said. "So seeing the loss of both Walgreens and CVS, it was detrimental to that community, to that corridor as a whole." He added that while Meijer, the Walmart on High Cross Road, and the Walgreens at Five Points are all in the general vicinity, local residents need a closer option. However, efforts to fill that void have run into an unexpected obstacle. Plans to open an independent pharmacy in a small building near the Sunnycrest Center, previously used as a vape shop and later for salt and light programming, seem to be effectively scuttled due to a restrictive covenant from 2007 that prevents a pharmacy from opening at the site. "No pharmacy is allowed to open there until 2042, said local realtor Phil Fisella, who is representing two individuals who seek to open a small independent pharmacy in the community. The News Gazette has obtained a copy of the restrictive covenant, which was agreed upon by different property owners in the Sunnycrest area and created to use restrictions to protect their respective business interests, including that of the Walgreens, which had yet to open at the time. Despite the fact that that particular pharmacy has been closed for a little over 18 months now, the company has declined to remove these restrictions," said Nathan Montgomery, executive director of Salt and Light, which owns the property at 1813 South Philo Road, where Fisella's clients had hoped to open the pharmacy, and also operates a thrift shop and grocery store at 1819 South Philo. "We're obviously disappointed and frustrated by Walgreens' decision that seems to be centered on nothing more than corporate greed when releasing this restriction would not come remotely close to impacting their bottom line," Montgomery said. The News Gazette has reached out to Walgreens' corporate media team but has yet to receive a response. "We're trying to move the community forward," said Williams, who has been part of the discussions about the site. "How a small independent pharmacy would challenge a conglomerate such as Walgreens, I'm baffled by their approach to this situation." Fisella said that his clients are two local men with deep roots in the industry who are passionate about helping people. "They sought to operate the location as a pharmacy only, without all the extra items one might find at a larger retailer. "It's small," he said. "We don't need an old Walgreens because all you need is the space behind the counter and room for two or three people to stand. So it's just a pharmacy, so it's affordable." He added that having a smaller operation means that pharmacists can build relationships with their customers and make sure they're taken care of. However, given the terms of the restrictive covenant, Fisella's clients are now considering another site in the Philo Road area, though he couldn't share the specific location. "We're not going to stop moving forward," Williams said. "We're going to continue to reach out and ensure that we do our part to the best of our ability to fill that void." Still, in Williams' opinion, a property owned by Salt and Light would have been the perfect home for the business. The News Gazette reported in July 2007 that there were plans for the Walgreens at 1819 South Philo Road to relocate to a store that would be built on a nearby outlot to the east. In August of that same year, the three property owners in the Sunnycrest area entered into an agreement. Neiman Foods, owner of a county market that became Salt and Light's grocery store, local developer Clive Fulmer, and Networks USA. At that time, Networks USA owned both the site of the old Walgreens and the chain's new store that would later open a year or two later. It still owns the latter, Fisella said. Montgomery shared a copy of the agreement with the News Gazette. Among other things, the document states that for as long as the property at 1801 South Philo Road is leased to Walgreens or owned by the company, pharmacies are not allowed to open on certain properties surrounding that site. And this includes the lot at 1813 South Philo that Fisella's clients had their eye on. The easements hereby granted and the restrictions hereby imposed and the covenants herein contained shall be easements, restrictions, and covenants running with the land, but they're not personal covenants, the agreement states. The document also gives Walgreens the right to enforce the agreement's provisions on behalf of its landlord. The agreement can only be terminated or changed with the written consent of the owners of 90% of the aggregate number of square feet of the properties that are subject to the agreement. Fast forward nearly 10 years after the agreement signing to when the county market at 1819 South Philo closed in August 2016. About a year later, Salt and Light announced that it had entered into a 5-year lease-to-purchase agreement with Neiman Foods for the property. The deal included the site at 1813 South Philo that has housed a variety of businesses over the years. Exotic Smoke Shop was located in the space as recently as 2023. Montgomery estimated that the building has been vacant since about early 2024. Salt and Light did not relist the property and instead used it to host Narcotics Anonymous meetings a couple times a week. And I'm going to wrap that story up for now and move on to some news over the weekend. It looks like this is a story by Luke Taylor, and the headline reads, Urbana Man Pleads Guilty in City's First Fatal Shooting Incident in 2026. An Urbana man pleaded guilty Friday to second-degree murder in the city's first fatal shooting of 2026. Charles Lake, 20, was originally charged with 4 counts of first-degree murder, 1 count of aggravated unlawful possession of a weapon, and 1 count of aggravated battery. A charge of second-degree murder was added later. Lake pleaded guilty to it and saw the remaining 6 charges dismissed. This specific second-degree murder charge states that the perpetrator believed at the time of the offense that they were acting in self-defense, but that belief was found to be unreasonable. Police responded to a report of a shooting at the 1200 block of Ellis Drive around 1:48 a.m. January 16th. They found a 52-year-old Champaign man identified as Benancio Crowley with a gunshot wound that had entered the left side of his chest and passed through his back. He was transported to Carl Foundation Hospital and pronounced dead an hour later. Lake was identified as the shooter by Mr. Crowley's wife, who had been attempting life-saving measures when police arrived. She told police that she'd been present at the scene in her car after she was told to be there due to an argument escalating between Mr. Crowley and Lake, who was 19 at the time. Over the course of a few interviews, she told police that Lake ran out of the house there and got in her car while she was sitting and waiting. She alleged he was holding a gun and possibly looking for somewhere to hide it. He apparently got back out of the vehicle and attempted to hide the firearm in leaves and snow before getting into a different vehicle and leaving. The woman said she then collected the gun and moved it to a different hiding space where she told police they could find it. They did, in fact, find it there. Mr. Crowley's son reported to police that he was in the building at the time of the shooting, but downstairs from where it occurred. He said that he heard Lake saying, "Get out of my face," to which Mr. Crowley responded, "I don't care about all that." Then he heard a gunshot. Police recovered texts between the defendant and the victim that, alongside accounts from the witnesses, suggested Mr. Crowley had sold Lake 2 firearms and arranged a payment plan of some kind for the second. He hadn't actually handed over that second firearm yet. Lake seemed to be angry at not receiving it and had come over to confront Mr. Crowley. At the time of the incident, Lake was on pretrial release in another case in which he had been charged with threatening to kill a woman. The woman reported to police that she had discovered she was pregnant with his child and that he began threatening her after she told him. The negotiated plea did not include a sentence, so a sentence hearing has been scheduled for September 30th. Under Illinois law, the sentencing range for second-degree murder is 4 to 20 years in prison. And there's also a new It's Your Business column by Jana Wiersema, the headline reads, From Side Hustles to Sweet and Savory Success. For fans of pork rinds, local business Siddity Pig Pork Snacks offers a wide variety of options with over 25 flavors on its menu. Ironic, considering that co-owner Harry Settles used to hate the snack. When you opened a bag, I couldn't stand them, he said. He didn't start to change his tune until he tasted some that had been freshly made, which were leaps and bounds above anything store-bought. Settles began to make pork rinds for himself and his wife, as well as some of their friends. Then after he got into an accident while working as a semi-truck driver, he sold pork rinds to friends and family as a way to make a little cash while he was stuck at home. The business grew from there. My first time out, I went to the farmer's market and I wasn't going to be there every Saturday, Settles said. It was just like whatever. And the first Saturday, I had a non-stop line and I sold out quick. And so I was like, maybe this can really be something. About 3 years after its first farmer's market appearance, Siddity Pig Pork Snacks is gearing up to open its first brick-and-mortar location at 2004 South Neal Street in Champaign, alongside Sugar Dust Creations, another homegrown business. The space was formerly home to Honey Bunny Bakes, which closed earlier this year. The storefront's two new occupants hope to open in a month. It's a very exciting time, said Sugar Dust owner Becky Strawbridge. Yes, stressful too, Settles chimed in. Strawbridge's story is similar to Settles. I was doing cookies and cakes and specialty chocolates for family and friends and birthday parties, she said, and everybody loved it so much that I started doing it on the side to make some extra money. Strawbridge began going to the farmer's market last year and saw that there was an eager appetite for her offerings. The market was also where she met Settles. We're both pretty creative, Settles said, so we're going to try to do like some merging with what I do and what she does. Sweet and savory kind of take on it, Strawbridge said, and a lot of my stuff will have to be in the coolers, and then his will be on the shelving units. She added that sharing a storefront is mutually beneficial because it means that her customer base will be introduced to Settles' products and vice versa. The two entrepreneurs also hope to help out some of the other local vendors who attend farmers markets. We want to try to help other people that have been in the position like us to try to get their stuff out there, Settles said. We'd love to be able to help new vendors that are just starting out not to have to go through all the trials and errors that we did trying to expand and get to this point, Strawbridge said, adding that she's benefited from Settles' experience. We help each other, Settles said. Because there's a lot of stuff I don't know that she knows and vice versa, so we want to build that kind of community. When you start a business, you definitely don't need to lose any more money than you're already losing. And here we have a different business story in the column. Dreamers Inc., which suffered a fire in July, is now accepting new appointments in a temporary location. We're beyond thankful for Matt Steins at No Regrets Tattoo for allowing us to use his entire Danville location as our own until our shop is back up and running. Dreamers Inc. owner Kylie Lesko wrote that in a Facebook post. For those that don't know, this is once my home base. This is where it all began for me. For my mentor to reach out and allow us to use this space, let alone the entire shop, as our own, means the world to me. No Regrets Tattoos and Body Piercings Danville Shop is at 2807 North Vermilion Street. A new restaurant known as Patty's Drive-In has announced plans to open in the former KFC at 1000 Charleston Avenue. The business told the News Gazette that the goal is to open October 14th, fingers crossed. We'll be serving up smash burgers, Italian beef, heroes, Chicago-style hot dogs, chicken, dirty soda, etc., the restaurant said. And moving on here, we have the University of Illinois Research Parks Enterprise Works Program has been named one of America's best incubators and accelerators of 2026 by Time Magazine. The recognition reflects a collaborative effort to launch and support startup companies through entrepreneurial resources, mentorship, programming, and incubator space, UIRP officials said. As an on-campus technology hub, Research Park connects startups with global companies to drive joint innovation and research and development, building the technology, talent, and teams that power that growth. Time ranked the Research Parks program 27th in a list of 80 incubators and accelerators. Enterprise Works has incubated over 400 startups, which have collectively raised over $1.6 billion in venture capital, UIRP officials said. Moving on to some state news here, we have a story from Capital News Illinois with the headline, State Toll Rates to Rise Next Year. Governor Pritzker appoints a new transit board. This is by Ben Zielinski and Brendan Moore of Capital News. A recently passed state law is beginning to reshape Illinois' transportation landscape as drivers on state tollways will see rate hikes and a new oversight board is taking shape. The Illinois State Toll Highway Authority on Wednesday approved the first toll rate increase in 15 years, and Governor J.B. Pritzker on Friday announced his appointments to the new Northern Illinois Transit Authority Board, which will replace the Regional Transportation Authority next month as the body overseeing the Chicago Transit Authority, Metra Commuter Rail, and Pace Suburban Bus. The Illinois Tollway Board approved rate hikes for all vehicles on Wednesday that will take effect January 1st. Passenger vehicles will pay 45 cents more when passing through each toll, while truckers will pay on average 30% more. Tolls will increase based on inflation every 2 years going forward without further approval from the board. Toll rates vary depending on the road, type of vehicle, and whether the car has an I-pass, but generally range between 45 cents and $3 for passenger vehicles under the current rates. Even with the increase, the tollway claimed in a news release that the average per mile cost is still 5 cents below the national average. The hike will fund a $26.5 billion capital program that includes major projects across the tollway system, which stretches as far west as Rockford and Dixon. Nearly 1.7 million drivers rely on this system every day, and our responsibility extends well beyond the next construction season, Executive Director Cassandra Rouse said in a statement. We know where congestion is growing, and we know how our infrastructure ages. Driving connections gives us a responsible path to meet those needs and keep Northern Illinois moving for the next generation. The toll hike was permitted by legislation passed last fall to reform and fund public transportation throughout the state, but especially in the Chicago area. While the bill redirected state road fund money away from road construction projects to public transportation, it also allowed the tollway to substantially raise revenue to fund a new capital plan. It was part of a deal between lawmakers and labor unions to find a funding source for public transportation without substantially reducing road work in the state. Mark Poulos from the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 150 told lawmakers last year the increase could boost tollway funding by $1 billion annually. Pritzker defended the toll increase following a political rally at the state fair. He touted measures he's approved to lower costs and blamed Republican policies at the national level for raising the price of gas and groceries. We want to make sure that our roads are pothole-free, that we're making sure to build more so that we can build our economy across the state of Illinois, Pritzker told reporters. His Republican opponent, Darren Bailey, slammed the toll hike during Republican events around the fair Thursday and called for abolishing tolls entirely, though he did not specify a funding source for future road construction. What do you think happens to all the everyday prices of every item that's trucked into Chicago, into Illinois, all across the country? Bailey's running mate Aaron Del Mar told reporters. That price raises up, so you can't talk about affordability at the same time as you're raising taxes. Among other projects, the tollway plan includes reconstruction of the Interstate 88-355 interchange outside the tollway's Downers Grove headquarters, a new interchange on I-294 at Irving Park Road, south of O'Hare Airport, parking and employee access off I-490 on the west side of O'Hare, and resurfacing, bridge repairs, and technology upgrades throughout the system. Tollway officials argued these projects, while creating headaches for drivers initially, pay off later by reducing congestion. The Jane Addams Expressway expansion, completed nearly a decade ago, reduced travel times by 25 minutes, according to the Tollway. The NITA's 20-member board will be composed of 5 members, each appointed by Pritzker. Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson and Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle, as well as one each by the board's chairs of Kane, Lake, McHenry, DuPage, and Will counties. The new board, which takes over September 1st, is designed to be a stronger version of the RTA, with broad authority to establish a universal fare system and coordinate schedules between the CTA, Metra, and PACE. And under the new structure, several members of the larger NITA board will also serve on the 3 service agencies' boards, enough to form majorities on those boards to promote cooperation and alignment across the systems. Pritzker's appointees to the NITA board are Bashir Kasim, Nidra Sims, Fears, Nirali Shah, Rose Ortiz, and Vanessa Uribe. The governor also reappointed Nima Jha to the CTA board. Kasim, who will also serve on Metra's board, is vice president of the whole group, where he advises large organizations on how to deploy artificial intelligence. He previously held senior roles at tech companies Aforza and Accenture, advising on technology and organizational strategy, according to the governor's office. Sims Fears, who will also serve on the CTA's board, is the executive director of the Greater Chatham Initiative, which promotes investment and economic growth on Chicago's South Side. She previously worked in banking and community development financing at Fannie Mae, the City of Chicago, and the Community Investment Corporation. Ortiz, who will also serve on PACE's board, is an urban planner and the founder of 3E Studio, a planning and community development consulting firm. She's served on the CTA board since 2021 and was previously a deputy commissioner in the City of Chicago's Department of Housing and has held leadership positions in organizations like the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning. Uribe is an associate vice president at the Chicago Community Trust and had previously worked as chief deputy in the Illinois Secretary of State's executive office and as chief of staff and deputy director of the Office of Economic Equity and Empowerment within the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. She will only serve on the NITA board. Jha, who will only serve on the CTA board, is a director at Charles River Associates, where she advises large organizations on technology infrastructure modernization. She served on the board since 2021. My board members will play a critical role in modernizing Illinois' transit system so we can continue to strengthen operations, make necessary upgrades, and better connect communities across our state, Pritzker said in a news release. I am proud to appoint highly qualified, dedicated Illinoisans who will help advance this important work. And moving on here, we have a local story looking at a University of Illinois-focused story with the headline, Teachers for a Day. Several Illini football players drop by elementary schools to share their stories, encourage fifth-grade students. This is by Abisola Dahunsi. A handful of Illini football players traded the gridiron for an elementary school lunchroom Friday afternoon, dropping by Stratton Academy of the Arts to answer questions about college life and share words of encouragement with fifth graders. The annual event, which also included a stop at an Urbana Elementary school, brought 7 Illini athletes into the elementary's lunchroom to connect with students and hand out school supplies as the new academic year gets underway. The visit took place at a school where more than 70% of students are Black. Stratton also has a prominent Congolese community, accounting for roughly a quarter of the student population. The school and its community have experienced significant systemic socioeconomic disparities. For senior offensive lineman Brandon Henderson, he said the visit was a chance to set those challenges aside and give back to students who remind him a lot of himself growing up. "We don't really get this opportunity a lot," the East St. Louis native said, "so it feels good to give back to these kids specifically and just speak some words of encouragement to them. Henderson graduated from Illinois after 3 years and is considering a graduate program while continuing to play football for Brett Bielema's program. During the question and answer session, students asked the players about their positions, athletic scholarships, their favorite subjects, and how long they've been playing football. When students asked them to rate their football skills on a scale of 1 to 10, the players' answers ranged from 5 to 8. Several players, however, emphasized that there's always room to improve, regardless of how good you are currently. Anybody will tell you that they're the best at something. That's actually when you should be looking for room to grow and improve, one player told the students. The players also talked about their own experiences in school, with several naming math as their favorite subject. Others pointed to English and history. The visit offered a chance for students like Earl or E.J. Barber Jr. to interact with college athletes up close. They're very nice and they do football. I like football a lot, Barber said. The fifth grader added that he's interested in playing football and was excited about the activities and giveaways planned for the students. Like Berber, fellow classmate Wilfie Shantabwe shared that the visit was a moment to see football players in person. It was fun and they don't intimidate me at all, Tishantwe said simply, having a hard time with that name. She noted that she's more interested in track and dance and football, but enjoyed being able to ask questions and interact with real adult players. The visit ended with a group photograph before the athletes and students headed outside to play football together. For the players, the day was less about football statistics or competition and more about showing students what might be possible beyond elementary school. Henderson said continuing his education while playing football at Illinois means that he does not take the sport for granted. It means a lot, he said, of receiving a scholarship. Getting a scholarship definitely helped me out in school, but it gave me a sense of purpose outside of my academics. There are some photos here of the kids with the football players. And we have another crime-related story here with the headline, Ammons's Trials Moved to Election Dates. And this is by Yana Wiersema. Requests by State Representative Carol Ammons and Champaign County Clerk and Recorder Aaron Ammons to push back dates in their upcoming federal trial have been granted. However, the new dates will coincide with two very important days for the county clerk's office. Pretrial conferences for the Ammonses have been rescheduled from August 24th to the morning of November 3rd, Election Day. According to the court docket, these conferences are set to occur over Zoom. Meanwhile, the jury trial, previously slated to start September 22nd, is now set to begin November 17th, the last day for an election authority to finish counting vote-by-mail ballots that were postmarked by Election Day, according to the Illinois State Board of Elections. The federal grand jury indictment accuses Carol Ammons of misusing campaign funds and state grants to benefit herself and her family and conspiring with husband Aaron Ammons to impede the investigation of alleged fraud. She's facing 8 counts of wire fraud, 1 count of providing a false statement to an FBI agent, and 1 count of conspiracy to obstruct justice. Aaron Ammons is charged with 1 count of conspiracy to obstruct justice and 1 count of obstruction of justice. Both are pleading not guilty. The Ammonses each filed motions earlier this week requesting that their pretrial conferences and trial date be moved back. The discovery in this case is substantial, including numerous documents and videos, wrote attorney Angela Rainey, who is part of Carol Ammons's legal team. Due to the large amount of discovery, Ms. Ammons does not have time to adequately prepare for trial and investigate the case. Magistrate Judge Eric Long granted both defendants' requests, finding in each case that failing to grant the continuance would deny counsel for the defendant reasonable time necessary for effective preparation for trial, taking into account the exercise of due diligence. And that wraps up the story. And that will wrap up the first half of the reading of the News Gazette for Monday, August 24th. I'm going to take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette shortly. Please stay tuned.